The charts are red. The fear is palpable.
There really is.
We're seeing 30, 40% drops in major digital assets, and it's happening over just a few days.
Mm-hmm.
But what if this extreme volatility, what if it isn't evidence that something is broken? What if it's actually, you know, a necessary feature of growth? We're diving deep into that data today.
Welcome to the Deep Dive. You've sent us an extensive stack of analytical reports, all focused entirely on this crypto market turmoil. And we know that anxiety is running high out there.
That's right. And we really need to cut through that noise, get a clear, objective lens on this. Our mission today is to help you understand what kind of downturn this really is.
Right.
Is it a fundamental structural collapse of the whole ecosystem? Or is it what these analysts are calling a growth scare?
And we're aiming to transform that visceral market fear into some actionable clarity. So we've structured this analysis into three main areas for you. First, we'll explore the psychology of this extreme volatility and the only strategy that has consistently built sustainable wealth across these cycles. It's always the hardest one for people to actually do.
Mm-hmm. And second, we'll analyze the shifting micro signals, which surprisingly are actually becoming more supportive. Then we're going to zero in on two absolutely crucial technical support levels for Bitcoin that really define the long-term floor.
And finally, we'll shift gears into specific sectors and assets. We're going deep into the Q3 earnings, separating the one-time profits from sustainable revenue, and we'll look at the surprisingly strong thesis behind digital asset treasuries and this emerging category of AI hybrids.
Okay, let's unpack this. Let's get right into it. We have to start with the reality of the charts. If you've been watching the screens, the volatility is intense.
It is.
We are seeing major assets, the leaders, the protocols you rely on, sweeping down 20, 30, sometimes even 40% in just a couple of days.
And that speed, the sheer velocity of the move, that's what causes the most damage. It's a gut feeling.
Yeah.
It pushes all the fear indicators, which we'll look at later, to their absolute limits. It genuinely convinces a lot of investors that something fundamental, you know, something structural has broken.
But if you've been in this asset class for more than one cycle, you recognize this pattern. Volatility isn't just common, it's baked into the DNA of early stage disruptive tech.
Absolutely. Sure. Crypto punishes anyone who expects a straight lineup or, you know, smooth traditional market performance. It just doesn't work that way.
Which leads to that core kind of counterintuitive concept the source material brings up.
Which is that these massive drawdowns aren't necessarily system bugs. They are often necessary features that clean out leverage and weak hands, and they are what comes right before the biggest, most aggressive rallies.
Can we anchor that in history for a second?
Mm-hmm.
Because for someone new to this space, a 40% drop feels like a complete disaster, not a feature.
We absolutely should. I mean, look back at the 2017 cycle. We saw multiple drawdowns of over 30% before the market peaked. Or 2021, the market was literally cut in half. It dropped from 64,000 down to 29,000 before powering onto new highs later that same year.
Wow.
So if you want to succeed here, you have to mentally model for these repeated, aggressive 30 to 50% pullbacks. It's not a sprint. You are training for a multi-year marathon where these pain points are just mandatory checkpoints.
That reframing is so key, and it allows us to use the term that the analysis uses for the current environment. This intense selling period is a growth scare.
Exactly.
And that's fundamentally different from a structural collapse or a deep, prolonged recessionary bear market.
A growth scare just means the market is rapidly pricing in fear. It's moving at warp speed, even while the underlying fundamentals, the tech advancements, are changing very slowly, if at all.
So the long-term thesis that drew you in the first place, that's still intact.
It's still intact. But short-term anxiety, coupled with all these leveraged positions getting liquidated, it just takes over the price mechanism completely. It's a psychological event disguised as a fundamental one.
So if the long-term thesis for DeFi or digital ownership hasn't really changed, but the price is panicking, how do we tell the difference between this emotional scare and something that would actually signal a real structural collapse?
You have to look for signs of fundamental abandonment of the technology, not just a decline in price. And when that fear takes hold, we see the most common mistake retail investors make.
What's that?
They try to short-term trade in this incredibly volatile environment. They feel that urgent impulse to just do something.
Right. And the data is just overwhelming on this, isn't it? Short-term trading is empirically the fastest way to lose money in markets, defined by this kind of speed and intensity.
Yeah.
So why are the odds stacked so heavily against the individual who's trying to time the top or the bottom?
Well, it's the sheer asymmetry of information and execution speed. Large institutions, they're using complex algorithms to exploit these emotional reactions.
Mm-hmm.
So when a retail trader tries to catch the bottom, they're often just reacting emotionally to a momentary dip, confusing all that noise for a legitimate buy signal.
Mm.
And the market, which is designed to maximize pain, it exploits that exact timing. It's a behavioral trap.
You know, I still wrestle with strategy drift myself. I try to stick rigidly to the long-term plan, but when the charts look so terrifyingly red,
it's hard.
It's so hard. You see those deep red candles, and the immediate impulse is to try and minimize the pain right now by selling rather than letting the long-term compounding thesis play out over years. That consistency is truly the hardest discipline in this space.
And that vulnerability, just acknowledging how hard it is to be consistent, that's vital. But if we could contrast that high-frequency short-term trading with the strategy that has genuinely built wealth across every single cycle we've ever analyzed.
What is it?
The strategy is remarkably simple, though it's not easy.
Okay.
Hold through the entire cycle and buy strategically when market fear peaks.
So patience is the differentiator, but this can't be blind. Passive patience, right? The source material emphasizes staying patient while also keeping a sharp, critical eye, adapting your worldview only when new fundamental data says you have to.
Exactly. You maintain this iron grip on your long-term plan, which is based on your belief in the technology. But you have to be open to adapting if the fundamentals shift dramatically.
Like what?
Like if, say, Ethereum failed a major upgrade, or if some new regulation just fundamentally changed the industry's ability to operate. Your analysis has to be focused on underlying tech adoption and macro trends, not the daily price ticker. That's what informed patience is.
Considering the intensity of this current growth scare, how do we practically distinguish this emotional reaction, which is temporary, from a legitimate fundamental shift that would require us to change our long-term thesis?
We must look for changes in macro liquidity trends and sustained adoption metrics. And that takes us perfectly into the macro environment. If we can look past the immediate price fear in crypto, the external, broader economic context is surprisingly supportive right now.
Really?
Yeah, especially when you compare it to the sentiment that's being reflected in digital asset prices.
So why are we seeing this disconnect? If the macro environment is supportive, shouldn't the prices already be responding to that?
That's the divergence puzzle, which we'll get to in a sec. But the data shows specific concrete tailwinds are emerging that traditionally boost risk assets.
Like what?
First, global liquidity is slowly but definitively getting better. Second, inflation seems to be structurally under control, which stabilizes the whole economic outlook.
And the biggest shift is the central banks, right?
Absolutely. Rate cuts are moving from, you know, a distant possibility to a high probability on the near-term horizon. But critically, we have to focus on quantitative tightening, or QT. The analysis points to QT being scheduled to definitively end in December.
Okay, for the listener, we have to break down what QT is and why its ending is such a major signal for risk-friendly assets like crypto.
Sure. So quantitative tightening is the process where the central bank actively shrinks its balance sheet. They do this by letting previously purchased bonds mature without reinvesting the money.
So they're essentially pulling cash out of the financial system.
They're pulling liquidity right out of the system. So when they stop this process, when QT ends, they stop actively draining liquidity. This creates significant headroom for risk assets because there's more capital available in the system, and that capital eventually starts chasing yield in higher risk categories.
That makes the end of QT a much clearer catalyst than just waiting for the first rate cut.
It is. It's the removal of an active restrictive force. And on top of that, we need to look at the U.S. dollar, specifically the dollar index, or the DXY.
Okay.
We've seen a recent short-term spike in the dollar index, which was driven mostly by this rotation to safety. And that spike added a lot of pressure to crypto prices, because Bitcoin often trades inversely to the dollar.
But what's the longer-term outlook for the dollar?
The overall base case points lower for the dollar over the next few months as rate expectations stabilize. And a weakening dollar is historically one of the strongest tailwinds for risk assets.
Why is that?
Because global investors need to hedge against dollar depreciation, and they often use non-sovereign stores of value, like digital currency, to do that.
And finally, there's the Japan wildcard. This can feel like a technical footnote, but Japan's monetary policy is a huge global swing factor.
It's complicated, but it is essential. We've seen these persistent fears around a potential yen carry trade unwind.
Okay, a carry trade is when an investor borrows money in a low-interest currency, like the yen, and invests it in a high-interest asset somewhere else.
Exactly. So if the Bank of Japan suddenly changes policy and raises rates, investors rush to repay their yen loans, which could create a global liquidity crunch.
But that's not what's happening.
Right. The source material notes that Japan's new leadership seems very willing to maintain those incredibly loose monetary conditions. So that counteracts those carry trade unwind fears for now. This continued global financial ease is a benefit for risk assets across the board, including crypto.
If liquidity is slowly improving and these restrictive forces are being lifted, why is crypto still down 30% while the stock market is near all-time highs?
Liquidity has temporarily rotated away, amplifying crypto's natural volatility. And this is the divergence puzzle that confuses most people, and it's where the analysis gets really interesting. We see this stark contrast. The NASDAQ and the S&P 500 are near all-time highs, fueled by this intense AI euphoria.
Right.
But crypto is down significantly, sometimes 20 to 40% from its recent local peaks.
The intuitive conclusion for many would be, well, crypto is fundamentally weak if it can't participate in a major tech rally.
The analysis says that's incorrect. Mm-hmm. This divergence does not indicate fundamental weakness in the crypto asset class itself. It signals that institutional liquidity has temporarily and aggressively rotated away from crypto and into the highly visible, accessible AI winners in traditional markets.
The Magnificent Seven and so on.
Exactly.
But if AI is driving the stock market and we have all these crypto-native AI protocols, Fetch.ai, Render, things like that, why isn't that liquidity spillover happening immediately into the digital asset space? Is this a failure of crypto AI to execute, or is it pure institutional timing?
It's largely institutional timing and risk profiling. Big institutional money prefers the established, regulated rails of NASDAQ.
Makes sense.
And the crypto-native AI tokens are seen, at least currently, as just too early stage. They lack scale, and they don't have the deep, defensible moats that the established tech giants have. So when liquidity rotates out like this, it starves the digital asset market of capital, which dramatically amplifies the natural volatility.
Creating these deeper, faster drawdowns.
Exactly. It's an external pressure, not an internal structural fault.
Let's ground this analysis in the actual technical posture of Bitcoin, because even with this dramatic sell-off, the source material maintains that technically this is still behaving within what's considered normal cycle behavior.
We have to move beyond the daily charts and look at the structural lines in the sand. These two levels define the difference between a healthy correction and a true collapse. The first is the 50-week moving average.
And that currently sits at around $100,000. What's the significance of the 50-week?
The 50-week MA represents the average price over the last year of trading, all smoothed out. It serves as a key indicator of intermediate-term strength. The analysis shows that losing this level for two consecutive weekly closes has historically signaled deeper downside potential.
So it's the market signaling that the intermediate trend has turned bearish.
It's your first major warning.
And then the ultimate floor, the structural anchor, the 200-week moving average.
This is the critical line. It's currently sitting around $70,000. This level has reliably served as the long-term structural floor across every single major cycle Bitcoin has ever experienced.
Wow. Every single one.
Every one. And the reason it's so powerful is because it represents the sustained average cost basis over about 4 years.
Right.
So testing this level historically establishes deep value and removes almost all the leverage from the system. It's where patient, long-term investors begin to aggressively accumulate.
Beyond just the price levels, the on-chain indicators seem unified in their perspective, that this is corrective, not catastrophic. What specific signals are supporting this view?
We're seeing a market that is just fundamentally tired and oversold. The Relative Strength Index, the RSI, it's a momentum oscillator. When it dips into oversold territory, it indicates assets have been sold off too quickly and may be primed for a bounce.
Okay.
Sentiment is also completely washed out, which we can measure using the Fear and Greed Index. And it's firmly back in fear territory. And historically, buying when that index screams fear is where patient capital earns its best long-term returns.
But we can't rely on just one indicator. We need to cross-validate.
Exactly. And that's why we look at the MVRP Z score. Yeah. This is a measure of market value, the current price versus realized value, which is the average price coins were last moved on chain.
And what does that tell us?
When the MBRV Z score is low, it means the market price is far below the cost basis of long-term holders. Deep undervaluation.
And where is it now?
It's right in the mid-range. And this reinforces the view that we are simply in a correction, not a collapse. If this were truly catastrophic, the Z score would be plunging into that deep undervaluation territory, signaling massive losses for the average investor. The fact that it's mid-range supports the idea that this is a healthy, albeit painful, correction that's removing excess leverage without undermining the entire asset base.
So if the 200-week MA is that structural floor, what makes that $70,000 level the precise psychological and actual point of maximum opportunity for this correction?
It's the four-year average cost basis that signals maximum structural support. Shifting focus now to specific asset classes.
No.
Even with all this market turbulence, the strongest, most fundamental assets haven't changed.
Let me guess. Bitcoin, Ethereum.
Bitcoin, BTCX, Ethereum, and Ethereum, and Solana. Yeah. SolSox. They remain the core leaders. They have the deep liquidity and the proven fundamentals needed to weather these storms.
Now let's tackle the elephant in the room, AI investment. How should the informed investor approach exposure to AI within the crypto ecosystem?
Well, we have to separate the established strategy from the moonshot gambles. The smart money approach, according to this analysis, still favors leaning into the established tech giants. Google, Tesla, Meta, Microsoft.
And the reason is simple. They have massive defensible moats.
Exactly. They dominate in three areas. Proprietary compute power, massive, clean data sets, and global distribution channels.
Like an operating system or a search engine.
Right. A crypto protocol can't replicate that kind of infrastructure overnight. They have the resources to absorb risk and acquire talent.
On the other hand, we have the high-risk plays, the crypto-native AI protocols like Fetch.ai or Render. What's the fundamental caution with these assets?
They're almost all early-stage startups. The protocols often have unproven products that might not achieve scale, weak token designs that struggle to capture network value, and crucially, they lack a clear defensible moat against the giants.
So if a project can be replicated easily or relies on generic data, it's highly vulnerable. So if an investor feels compelled to get exposure to this early stage crypto native AI vertical, what's the right way to approach it?
You have to adopt an angel investor mindset. This means small, strictly defined allocations. You have to recognize the extremely high probability of failure and commit to multi-year patience.
So you're betting that one or two of these become outliers, knowing that most will likely fail entirely.
Precisely. It's speculation, not core portfolio building.
Okay, let's move from high-risk speculation to more structured institutional plays. Digital asset treasuries or DATs? Yeah. The analysis flags this as a high-conviction area, basically a leveraged macro call on the entire digital asset class.
DATs are critical because they package these volatile assets within publicly traded equities. And this is really attractive because it offers institutional-grade reporting, regulatory compliance, and familiar structures for traditional investors.
Right. Investors who might not be able to hold spot crypto directly for compliance or tax reasons.
Exactly.
And MicroStrategy is the classic example here. What's the current thesis on them?
MicroStrategy is still considered the cleanest, most focused leveraged bet on Bitcoin. It's a corporate structure whose primary mission is BTC accumulation.
And crucially, the sources indicate it's currently trading at a slight discount to its net asset value, or NAV.
Which means the stock price is valuing the underlying Bitcoin holdings at less than their actual market worth. The NAV discount presents an attractive entry point for pure Bitcoin exposure without the operational complexities of self-custody.
And Bitmine plays the same role for Ethereum exposure.
It does. A structured way to get that ETH exposure.
Okay, now for the nitty-gritty. Q3 earnings were released right in the middle of this market volatility, so we need to really analyze the performance, separating the one-time events from genuine, sustainable growth.
Yes. Let's start with Coinbase.
Okay, so Coinbase, TNYN, delivered one of the strongest quarters they've seen in years. Sharp increases in both core revenue and profitability. That's a huge positive signal of resilience.
It absolutely validates their position as the leading U.S. infrastructure provider. However, the analysis does note some persistent investor concerns.
Which are?
Specifically, high trading fees compared to competitors and the fact that the company reported negative free cash flow.
Can we reconcile the high profit with the negative cash flow? That sounds contradictory.
We can. The negative cash flow is largely driven by aggressive strategic acquisitions and heavy reinvestment into their institutional rails and compliance capabilities.
So it signals spending for future growth, not just burning money on operations.
Exactly. The market seems willing to tolerate this as long as the long-term thesis is solid.
And what defines that long-term case for them?
It's all about diversified, sticky revenue. It's revenue from the USDC yield share, which is a stable, non-transactional income stream.
Right.
It's their massive progress in building institutional settlement rails and key partnerships, like those enabling tokenized deposits with giants like JP Morgan.
So the base layer 2 chain is exciting, but it's not the core thesis.
It's upside potential. But the core investment thesis is built on Coinbase as the essential regulated infrastructure layer.
All right, what about Robinhood?
So Robinhood posted record revenue and EBITDA, which, again, sounds fantastic on the surface. But when you look deeper into the reports, the red flags are significant. They suggest a structural weakness that's linked directly to this volatility.
Detail those warning signs for us.
First, operating expenses are rising faster than new revenue streams are stabilizing. Second, and maybe more concerning, overall customer growth has flatlined.
Which indicates they've either saturated the market or retail interest is just fading.
Right. And third, the fact that their CFO stepped down adds a lot of executive uncertainty during a crucial growth phase.
And how does this market volatility affect Robinhood specifically?
Retail apathy is structurally hurting their crypto segment. Robinhood relies heavily on transaction volume and payment for order flow. When the market is quiet or when fear causes investors to pull back, their core business model suffers.
So until market sentiment broadly improves and retail enthusiasm comes back, HHOD is in a challenging spot.
A very challenging position compared to Coinbase, which is focusing on that institutional infrastructure.
Okay, now Galaxy Digital, GLXY, they truly shocked the market with a reported $505 million in Q3 net income. That's a massive headline.
It is. But the analysis clarifies that we need to understand the source of that income.
Right.
A lot of that $500 million income was from one-time investment gains and non-recurring events, mostly trading. You just can't project that forward. However, the insight here is that their current market cap at a surprisingly low $12 billion seems significantly disconnected from their actual future earnings potential.
And this brings us to what the analysis calls the true jewel within Galaxy Digital, the shift toward the Helios AI data center business. What is this and why is it such a game changer?
This is the massive pivot. Galaxy realized that the specialized high-density compute power they had set up for Bitcoin mining is now extremely valuable for hosting and training sophisticated AI models.
So they're leveraging their existing infrastructure and turning it into an AI hosting platform.
That's it. This business is scheduled to begin generating predictable, high-margin revenue in the first quarter of 2025 through stable, long-term hosting contracts.
That's a genius move, marrying infrastructure and next-gen tech.
It completely changes the risk profile. Instead of relying purely on the volatile price of Bitcoin for mining revenue, they're selling secure, distributed compute power, a critical resource in the AI race for high margins.
And that predictable revenue provides a stable foundation.
A foundation that balances out the volatile asset management side of their business. Whoa. I mean, imagine scaling this AI crypto hybrid revenue engine across the industry. They're effectively turning their mining infrastructure into the backbone for the global AI training effort. That capability is significant and deeply undervalued by the current market.
Finally, let's turn to the decentralized application layer. We're looking at specific protocols like Akave, A-A-V-E-X, and KARMMX, K-R-M-M-X.
Both of these protocols perform solidly in Q3. And this isn't just about token price, it's about proof of concept. They're demonstrating sustainable revenue streams, driven by real usage and transaction fees, even while the rest of the market is in this growth scare.
So these aren't just speculative tokens, they are next-generation financial services.
Exactly. They have clear product-market fit AV in lending, KAU in decentralized exchange aggregation. Their revenue is generated through fees and stable usage by real users, proving viability beyond just a simple token launch. They're building real financials, real products, and establishing themselves as viable entities.
So given the high-risk nature of those crypto-native AI tokens we talked about, what specific metrics should the average user look for to judge if they truly have a defensible moat against big tech?
Examine real, non-subsidized usage and clear, unique control over highly valuable data sets or specialized compute capacity. Okay, let's distill the core knowledge for you, the learner. This is your mental checklist for differentiating between market noise and a clear, actionable strategy in this current environment.
Number one, perspective. The current intense market volatility is fundamentally a growth scare, and it's been amplified by the temporary rotation of institutional liquidity toward traditional tech. It is so crucial to internalize that volatility is a feature of this asset class, not a bug that signals impending doom.
Number two, stratagem. Short-term trading is, empirically, a losing strategy for the vast majority of investors. Real, sustainable wealth is built through cycle patience, holding through these inevitable drawdowns, and strategically buying when the fear and greed index hits those irrational fear territory lows.
Number three, support levels. You need reference points to manage risk. Watch the $100,000 level, the 50-week moving average, as the intermediate support indicator. But critically, understand and trust the $70,000 level, the 200-week MA, which has consistently served as the structural floor for Bitcoin across every major cycle.
And number four, forward focus. While the high-risk crypto-native AI tokens require an angel investor mentality, tiny bets, long-time horizon, the institutional hybrid plays offer structure. Look closely at the undervalued potential of MicroStrategy for Bitcoin exposure, and especially Galaxy's Helios AI data center, which marries the stability of infrastructure revenue with the explosive growth of AI.
If we connect all this data to the broader economic narrative, the analysis strongly suggests that macro conditions, specifically the anticipated end of quantitative tightening and projected rate cuts, are slowly but surely turning supportive. This makes the current period, despite all the fear, an ideal time for long-term patience and strategic positioning.
Thank you for joining us for this deep dive into your source material. We hope this comprehensive analysis has given you the clarity and conviction needed to navigate this current cycle and see the long-term opportunity that's sitting just beneath the volatility.
And a final provocative thought for you to consider. If institutional liquidity returns en masse when quantitative tightening definitively ends in December, how quickly could those current AI-driven NASDAQ highs, which are sucking liquidity away now, become the new structural floor for digital assets when that capital rotation reverses? Something to mull over as you position for the coming cycles.
We'll see you next time.
We'll see you next time.